Let's return to the book of Job, chapter number 1. I'm going to start at verse 6 in a moment to get our context back in place. Remember that the book of Job seems to take place after the time that the Israelis went into Egypt, but before they had come out of Egypt toward the Promised Land. It takes place in the region east of the Jordan and Dead Sea Valley. The land of Uz seems to be probably the same general vicinity where Edom ends up eventually. Maybe a little bit of southern Moab as well. Somewhere in that place to the south and east of the Dead Sea. Job is the greatest man of this region at this time. He may himself be a descendant of Abraham, although we know at least a couple of his acquaintances, his friends, most definitely are descendants of Abraham. He is very wealthy, very blessed by God. He is a righteous man, and therefore he becomes the target of Satan, the adversary, the rebel angel that hates mankind with a passion and is looking for any way that he can drive a wedge between humanity and God and by that hurt God. So in Job, starting at verse 6 of chapter 1, we have some supernatural background material, things happening in the supernatural realm. Therefore, the person writing this down must be a prophet. I suspect it might have been Moses, but that's just me. This person lets us know that there is apparently some sort of parole hearing that takes place for the rebel angels from time to time. A place where I suspect they have to prove that they have not been violating the principles of their parole, which is that they cannot violate the free will of human beings. That's against the rules. They can do all sorts of other things, but not that. And so in the process of this parole hearing, God talks to Satan about Satan's apparent interest in Job. So let's read the passage itself and then continue on with what happens next. Now there was a day when the sons of God, that's the angels, came to present themselves before He who is, that's the Creator, and Satan, that'd be the chief rebel angel, also came among them. And He who is said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered He who is and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." And then He who is said to Satan, "Have you set your heart on my servant Job?" Remember, that's the literal Hebrew. God is apparently not drawing attention to Job, but rather noticing that Satan has his sights set on Job. "So have you set your heart on my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." So God effectively says, "You're kidding, right? You think you can turn my man Job against me?" Verse 9. "Then Satan answered He who is and said, 'Does not Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face.'" So Satan says, "Yeah, the only reason he's on your side is because you do nice things for him. You take all that stuff away, and he will hate your guts. He will turn on you like a rabid dog." Now, as I mentioned yesterday, I think this is really at the center of understanding the difference between those who truly have a relationship with God and those who only look like they have a relationship with God. That relationship is demonstrated as either real or fake when pressures come. Are we only on God's side because of what He does for us? Or are we on God's side because of who He is and the desire we have to be part and party with Him? We want to be one with the one who made us. And so I think all of us need to reevaluate ourselves on that basis. If God allowed all sorts of tragic things to occur in our lives, would we still be wanting a relationship with Him? If that is the case, then our relationship is genuine. You might remember something that Jesus says. He says, "He who remains faithful unto death, to him I will award the crown of eternal life." So we've got to stick with the Lord regardless of circumstances if we want to be with the Lord for eternity. All right, so Satan throws the challenge out, accuses God of basically keeping Job as some sort of puppet, not really his man. And so God gives permission to pierce the hedge of protection and blessing that's around him. Verse 12, "He who is," said to Satan, "behold, all that he has is in your hand. Only against him," meaning him personally, physically, "do not stretch out your hand." So Satan went out from the presence of he who is. Now we have some New Testament principles that Satan is not permitted to directly attack us Christians. 1 John 5:18 says that the evil one cannot touch us. But we do know from other passages, from time to time, God does allow things to happen to us, things that might be carried out by agents of Satan. After all, human beings have free will to do bad things against other human beings. So if Satan can convince some other human to do something to us, that doesn't break the direct touch rule. It doesn't break his parole requirements. So God does permit certain things to happen in our lives that are bad. And they are there to allow us to grow stronger and to prove to ourselves, really, more than to Him, that we really are on His side. We're not in this for what we're getting out of it. But I believe every Christian needs to memorize and use on a regular basis the promise of 1 Corinthians 10:13 that says there's always an ultimate line that God does not allow Satan or his human agents to cross when bad things start happening to us. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says this: "There is no temptation or testing that has come upon us except that which is common to all mankind," or all humanity. God is faithful. That means He can be trusted, folks. God is faithful in that He will not allow us to be tested or tempted beyond what we are able. And with that testing or temptation, He will provide a way of escape that we may be able to endure it. Now, what that pragmatically means is that we will never be put into a lose-lose situation. God never allows it to get so hot that we can't handle it. There is no temptation that we'd be able to throw our hands up and say, I can't help myself, because we always will be able to handle it. That's God's promise. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be pleasant. We may actually have only one way of escape in enduring a temptation, and that is dying in the midst of it. Think about Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, the three friends of Daniel. They were told by Nebuchadnezzar, you will worship my golden image, or I will kill you by throwing you into the fire. And their response, one other line. And he says, and don't you dare think that your God can rescue you out of my hands. And their response was, our God could rescue us in this situation, but even if he doesn't, we will not bow. Because they understood to bow was to violate their relationship with God. And they would rather die than do that. So what I'm trying to express to you is, it may get tough in your life, and it may be that the only way of escape is being killed for your faith. But that's okay, because they can't kill your soul. To be absent from that body, murdered by those who hate Christ and therefore hate Christians, will simply put you into the presence of the Lord. And so from now on, every last one of us have got to get into this habit of understanding God is in control, even when he permits bad things to happen in our lives. He already knows how much we can handle, and he makes sure we have a mechanism by which we can handle it. Start looking for the escape hatch, folks, when you're in a temptation situation. Start looking for the escape hatch when you're in a bad testing period, because it's there. I promise you. God has promised you. So memorize 1 Corinthians 10:13 and use it all the time. So back to the text, Job chapter 1, verse 12. Satan went out from the presence of he who is. So he leaves the parole hearing, and he goes back to planet Earth, and then he starts doing his dastardly work. Now there was a day when Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. So this is one of those times of the year that they're together as a group. There came a messenger to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. So the Sabaeans, by the way, are descendants of Cush through the line of Ham, and they live down in the Arabian Peninsula. So this is another reason to think we're talking about Uz being in the land to the southeast of the Dead Sea. So these Sabaeans come north, sweeping out of their territory up into the territory of Uz, and they are raiding their grabbing animals for their own purposes, and killing anyone that tries to stop them from taking them. And so in their raid, they take all of Job's oxen and donkeys and kill all of his attendants for those animals, except for one guy. And all of this is through Satan's manipulation. He uses the Sabaeans, who are his agents, to do all this nasty stuff against Job's people. And probably leaves one guy in order to pass the message on, to make it hard on Job. Now, every last one of those people who died, 1 Corinthians 10:13 applied to them as well. The temptation, the testing that they were going through was not more than what they could handle, even though it did end up with them dying. And so those that had relationships with God, which I hope was the majority of them since they worked with Job, they should have been able to remain true to that faith regardless of what was happening to them. And you should apply that in the instances of all the people who die in this part of the story. Verse number 16. While he was yet speaking, so while the survivor of that tragedy is telling Job about it, there came another and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." So fire from God here is probably a reference to lightning. It is not God that is doing this. It is Satan that is utilizing the nature of God to do it. So he apparently has some sort of control over nature, which is interesting, isn't it? And so he kills Job's sheep and makes sure he takes out some of the people taking care of those sheep as well, leaving only one guy to go and tell the tale. So now Job has found out more of his animals are dead and more of his people serving him are dead. Verse 17, while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone am escaped to tell you." Now, the Chaldeans, those are the ancient Babylonians, particularly those living on basically in the same area same region where Jacob had gone and where Abraham had come from, that area right there in upper Mesopotamia. And so these guys also form raiding parties. They go south into the region east of the Jordan River, and these guys were after camels, and they killed Job's people in the process. And Satan is the one that manipulated all of that. And then comes the coup de grace, the final stroke that is probably being timed by Satan to have the hardest impact upon the heart of Job. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. Behold, a great wind came across the wilderness, struck the four corners of the house. It fell upon the young people, and they all died. And I alone have escaped to tell you." So again, Satan has some sort of control, at least limited control, given to him by God over the weather. And he forms a tornado, or maybe a straight line wind of some sort, and knocks the house down, killing everyone in it, among Job's kids and all of the attendants that they would have had, leaving one survivor. And so in just a few seconds of time, a couple of minutes, is all it would have taken to tell these tragic stories by the survivors, Job has lost everything of significance in his life. Satan took everything away from him on purpose, because he really does believe that that will rip the relationship between Job and God. But you see, Job is not about just the stuff. He is thankful for all of that, all the blessings of God, all the material possessions, all the family, kids that he's got. But that is not the only reason he serves God. He serves God because it's the right thing to do. So how does he react? Job arose. He tore his robe. That's a very ancient practice of mourning. It's basically showing you don't care about your clothing, which was actually considered a wealth item. You don't care maintaining its integrity because everything is just horrible. So he tore his robe. He shaved his head, which was another ancient sign of grief. And then he fell on the ground and he worshiped. Now, what's this deal about him worshiping? He basically starts praying. He's on his face and acknowledging who God is. He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb. Naked shall I return," not to his mother's womb, but out of this physical world. So he came into this world with nothing. When he dies, he's not taking anything out of this world into the next with him. He's leaving it all here, so he's going naked. He who is gave, he who is has taken away. Blessed be the name of he who is. Now, more than likely, he is using El Elyon, which is the God of gods that we've seen in the book of Genesis, or he might be using El Shaddai, the God of my chest, or later, kind of as a secondary meaning, the Almighty God. But whoever's writing this story down for the first time, after the Exodus, and I, again, suspect it might be Moses himself, uses the divine name to make it very clear to the Israeli readers who we're talking about. It is the Creator God, the God who brought Israel out of the land of slavery into the land of promise. He's the one that Job served and worshiped. And Job acknowledges, God gave me all this stuff. Then he says, God's taken it away. Now, it may be at this point that he thinks God was actively involved in that. Later, it won't seem that he is willing to acknowledge that as the case, and I think that's appropriate. But he most certainly has to acknowledge God gives permission for such things to be taken away. Regardless, God is to be blessed because he is God. We may not understand why he allows things to happen the way that they happen, but he is God, and we have to trust him in the midst of all of that and worship him and hold fast to him and refuse to abandon our relationship with him. And so basically, verse 21 shows that Satan was wrong. Job did not serve God only because of what he got out of it. He served God from his heart. So Satan loses round one of his accusation. And verse 22 reports that in all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. So he does not sin. He does not accuse God of being wicked and evil against him. He acknowledges that God is God, and I don't understand why, but he's still God, and I will worship him. Verse 1 of chapter 2. Let's set the stage for the next test. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before he who is, and Satan also came among them to present himself before he who is. And Satan said to he who is said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered Satan and said, Satan answered he who is and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, from walking up and down on it." And he who is said to Satan, "Have you set your heart on my servant Job?" So it's again, all of this is a repeat of the last one. So Job is still in the crosshairs of Satan, and God knows it. that there's none like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. He still holds fast to his integrity. We should think of faith in that word. Although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason. So even though you tried to make it look like I did all this bad stuff to him, he is still my man. Satan answered he who is and said, skin for skin. All that a man has, he'll give for his life. But stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face. So Satan says, yeah, that's just stuff. That's just somebody else that got killed. If you let me touch him personally, he will throw you under the bus. He will abandon you, just like that. So, he who is said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life. Meaning, you can't kill him, but yes, you may now touch him directly. So, only by God's permission can the next part happen. So Satan went out from the presence of he who is and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. So here he is. He now breaks out in these open sores, pus-filled and probably maggot-filled, because the flies come and land and lay their eggs and they hatch out and all that nastiness. And that's why he's scraping them with this broken pottery, try to get the garbage out of there. And we're going to close up in a moment. There is one other person that has to go through all this stuff, and that's Mrs. Job. And I don't think we should neglect how tough this was on her as well. And so tomorrow when we come back, we will see this first interaction after the tragedies between Mr. and Mrs. Job.